All right, welcome to Double Fries No Slaw. It is the first time in 14 or 15 months that we've had to come to you after a loss, but despite Richie's major protests, we're still here. Double Fries No Slaw brought to you by Guthrie's. We'll try and be quick because Richie doesn't have a super long time today. He's going to go drown his sorrows at a Bucks tailgate. Brought to you by Guthrie's in Tallahassee. You can visit all three of their locations, 1818 West Tennessee, 2550 North Monroe. I think it's 2870 Appalachie Parkway. If I'm wrong on that, it's really close. There's a Guthrie's. Oh, yeah, that's it. 2870 Appalachie Parkway. I got it right. So shout out to those good folks. It's a drive-thru or pickup only. Let's just get right into it, Richie. I don't want to ask you how your weekend was or anything like that, but on a disappointment level, 1 to 10, like factoring in your expectations, factoring in the fact that you probably didn't think we were going to lose by 60, like all things considered, like you knew we'd lose, you knew it wouldn't be competitive, but also like probably didn't expect 60. Where's your disappointment level after, you know, like has it changed since yesterday? Where is it today? Where was it immediately after the game? Like, where are you on this game specifically?
No, it's a zero for me, TJ. You know, I said it a few weeks back that, you know, when Florida State was not selected to play in the college football playoff, you know, the Florida State's 2023 season ended in Charlotte. And I truly believe that. And I believe that yesterday. I was excited to watch the game, excited for that first stop, the big play from Brock Glenn to Kentron Poirier early on. But, you know, the outcome of that game didn't matter to me. You know, obviously, you have to deal with the trolls when you lose by 60 points in a game and all the talking heads saying, oh, see, we were right. But no, the game to me, I just wanted to see how these young guys played. You know, I wasn't expecting us to win. I thought we'd get blown out, not to that level. But as far as disappointment, I don't have any because I had no expectations heading into the game. I don't know your thoughts, but that's kind of where my head was going into it during and after and the day after right now.
Yeah, disappointment level very low. You know, would I have preferred to not lose by 60? I mean, sure. You know, if there was a chance that it could have been slightly more competitive, I certainly would have appreciated and taken that. Man, I think there are some pretty big issues that I do want to talk about. You know, quickly, we'll get to that in a minute. I think there are some positives. I know it's hard to take positives from a 63-3 loss. But I do want to shout out Kalen DeLoach. There were some other guys too, like
yes.
Rosenberry, long snapper, like doesn't get a lot of love. And there were other guys that played in this game, Preston Daniel, like that are not going to be with FSU anymore. And you know, I think that was, you know, especially Kalen. Like I think he's probably the one that had the most to lose. Like I don't think Kalen's like a top three round draft pick by any means. I'd love for him to prove me wrong there. So, but you know, just being real with it, I think he's probably a day three guy, but still had probably the most to lose of anybody that played. And really was the only one who, you know, like your only star really that played. I mean, I guess Pat Payton was there. You had some offensive linemen in, but like, I think that, you know, Kalen just going out and playing was really, really special. You know, he's kind of overtaken by emotion. And before we get into any like real negative or talking about the haters or issues with the staff or anything else like that, I feel like it's only right to kind of give him some love. Truly, you know, one of the guys that was here when Willie was here and truly like embodied everything it meant to be a Seminole. Absolutely fantastic parents who, you know, Rob DeLoach is probably a better fan than any of us. Anywhere, and he has like a million Division I kids. Like he's just like running around everywhere. Like son plays for Georgia, you know, hoops team and stuff. So anyway, Kalen certainly deserves a hat off for, you know, just finishing. You know, we've talked about this. I don't have any problem, Richie, with anybody that opted out. I said that I wanted them to not even play the game. You know, and you know the way the payouts work, you split it 15, 16 ways anyway, and so you'd. You know, essentially, you know, just had Louisville play in that game and, you know, whatever the lowest ACC bowl was that, you know, you basically would, the conference wouldn't split the revenue in that. So it really wouldn't have been a big revenue loss to go or to just skip it anyway. But shout out to Kalen for finishing again. Just he's one that, you know, we'll miss a lot of guys on this team, you know, Jordan being one of them, Jared, Keon, Johnny, a lot of people, but like Kalen truly like, somewhat heart and soul of this team, just, you know, what he brought the last few years. So I'll let you kind of talk about that for a minute too.
Yeah, I think, you know, Kalen DeLoach embodies the climb, right? He committed to Willie Taggart at Florida State. You know, he was down to, I believe, Michigan, Auburn, and Florida State, and ended up at Florida State and stuck through it, right? Stuck through the Willie Taggart years, stuck through 3-6 in Mike's first season, and then 5-7 in the second season. And then he was a, you know, pivotal part of that 10-3 team last year that really turned the program around. And then a pivotal part of 13-0 this year. You know, I put on Twitter earlier this week, he had, in my opinion, the most important play of the season at Clemson when he had the fumble, or the sack, fumble recovery, touchdown, the Holy Trinity right there all in one. You know, this season is not the special one we just enjoyed without that play. And he literally did it all. I mean, you can give Braden Fisk the assist for kind of maybe, you know, patting the ball to him, so he could take it in. But yeah, that I watched that play and on the cinematic recap several times this week, just reminding me of what a special season we saw, guys. And, you know, yeah, yesterday sucked. But again, if you just remember the season as it was, as this 2023 team was as a whole, this was a very special season. And I'm struggling. You know, 2013 was probably my favorite season because I went to, I think, 9 of the 14 games. But this one was special, too. It was just a fun season. You know, we came in and we both thought we might lose a game along the way. And this team just didn't. They refused to lose. They refused to lose with Tate Rodemaker in the swamp. They refused to lose with a true freshman third-string quarterback, Brock Glenn, making his start. First start ever in Charlotte at the Panther Stadium against Louisville. The defense stepped up when they had to. You know, I hate that I was at the game where Jordan broke his leg, but, you know, that was a special game before everything happened, right? In the pre, you know, before the game, you know, all the ceremonial things, getting to meet Jameis Winston. This was just a fun, fun season for me, and I'll never forget it. And this team, as far as I'm concerned, TJ, will never be a 13-1 team. They are a 13-0 team that lost an exhibition match against Georgia. You know, we'll talk about the depth because clearly Georgia has exceptional depth. Florida State is still building towards that. Mike Norvell's first really, I guess, good recruiting class was probably last year. His first very good class was this year. It's going to take a few more years to build up that depth to compete in a game like we saw yesterday. But I feel like we're going in the right direction. So I'm not, you know, I don't feel bad about anything or feel like we're going in the wrong direction because of yesterday. I just feel like, you know, it's going to take a few more years. This was a massive rebuild. Jimbo checked out. Willie did what Willie did. And Mike's first 2 years were not good. So we are just now starting to see the fruits of the labor of what Mike's done, and it will take a few more years. But man, I'm excited where this train's going.
Yeah, it's funny to watch some of the takes, and I'll get into those in a moment. But all right, so you mentioned the opt-outs, and I believe this. I don't know if you think differently, but I truly believe that, like, I think this was, you know, people have made such a big deal of the opt-outs, and people are talking about culture, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but I truly believe that if things would have gone down just a little bit differently in any scenario, you'd have seen a lot less opt-outs. I think that, yeah. You know, for example, if Jordan Travis was just there, right? He was there, I guess he was at the game. If Jordan Travis was in and he was playing, I think almost everyone else plays the game. Minus, like, the injuries, right? Like, Toa Philly got surgery. Farmer was an injury thing. I think Tatum was, they didn't say specifically, but I think Tatum wanted to play, was an injury thing. I think Fisk wanted to play, but was an injury thing. But, like, outside of those guys, I think if Jordan is playing, like, Florida State goes 12-1, he doesn't get hurt, and they get left out there. I think he's playing. Or I think a lot of guys play. Maybe Keon opts out, maybe Verse opts out, but, I mean, those are first-round guys. I don't think anybody would blame them for that. I mean, Brock Bowers opted out, too. I mean, I don't think that's, like, a super big shock. But I think, you know, had Jordan been there, a lot more guys would have played. I think guys, at the end of the day, you know, people say, oh, well, the protesting looks bad or whatever. I don't know if it was protesting as much as just feeling like they had nothing left to give. And also just understanding, like, hey, it's not worth the risk for a game that we know how it's about to go down. And, you know, I think if Jordan's there, it's a much more competitive game. More guys stay in. I think, you know, there's been a big deal, Richie, being made about, Georgia felt like they got snubbed too, and they were in a bad mood, and they still didn't opt out. I think it's completely different when you have a team that loses in their conference championship and feels like they've got something to prove. Hey, we're going to prove you wrong and prove you to you why we should have been in the playoff, which, if going by the committee's logic, Georgia absolutely should have been in the playoff. They're absolutely one of the best four teams. They're probably the best team in the country. More stuff and more stuff is coming out about Michigan cheating and how bad they've been since Stallions wasn't on the staff anymore, and the fact that that doesn't get talked about
McCarthy
at all.
McCarthy's stats are hilarious if you look at those, like, before and after.
To me, Georgia had something to prove, and Florida State didn't feel like it had anything left to prove, right? And so that's the difference to me with why Georgia had less opt-outs, why Florida State had more. So, I don't know. But I think, say Florida State loses to, drops that game against Pitt, right? Weird game. Didn't pull away till late. And so you drop that game to Pitt, and you know you're out. Like, you know you're not playing. And then Jordan goes down. You know you're not playing for a championship, so you don't feel like you got screwed. You don't feel like the system screwed you. Florida State goes in the Orange Bowl last night at 12-1. I think that they, I think you have a lot less opt-outs. Jordan's playing. I think you have less opt-outs. I think there are different scenarios. I think the fact of all of it put together, and then you start to see more and more and more guys hurt, injured, opting out. I think that had a lot to play with it. So I don't know. Maybe you have a different take there, but I think if things play out a little bit differently, we see a lot less opt-outs in the game.
Yeah, no, I think it's the fact that, you know, at midnight on December 2nd, Florida State realized they had just won their conference championship and they had earned a spot in the college football playoff. And 12 hours later, they were told, no, not good enough, doesn't happen. That was a huge gut punch. It, to me as a fan, I can't even imagine for Mike, the staff, and the players. And I don't blame my... All of them should have opted out. Like, what's the point? Like, you were just told by the committee, who has all the power in the world, in the college football world, that what happened in those 13 games doesn't matter. You know, I'm going to the Bucs game, TJ. If they beat the Saints today, they are going to the playoffs. And imagine Roger Goodell coming in. If Baker Mayfield, you know, tears his ACL in the fourth quarter, and then Roger Goodell says, actually, I know you guys won. You earned your spot. But we're going to let the Saints go instead because you don't have Baker Mayfield. It's silly. And only in college football and college basketball do we have this nonsense. And I don't blame these players. They felt like they were robbed. And why go play in a game that's meaningless, especially the Keons and Johnnies and Jareds of the world who are going to get million-dollar paychecks? We saw, you know, the last time we were in the Orange Bowl, played Michigan in 2016, Jake Butt tore his ACL and dropped several rounds and lost millions of dollars and missed his whole rookie season. So, no, I don't blame any of these guys for opting out. Surprised that as many Georgia players played as they did, and good for them, you know, but I don't think it's a culture issue at all. I think that this was a team that was just heartbroken because they did not get what they deserved and what they earned on the field. And I don't blame a single one of them for not playing in that game yesterday.
Yeah, not at all. All right, let me read this super chat, then I'll move the culture thing up because you're talking about it, and then I know you got to run in a minute. But the Big Four of college football, soon to be Big Three, is turning into professional business. The 12-team playoff system is going to weaponize it even more. It's going to be the haves and have-nots. Yeah, it will, and you've already seen that. You've seen that with the 4-team playoff. It's going to continue to get worse and worse with the 12. I mean, you know, there are pros and cons for everything. Four was never a great number when you had four Power 5 or five Power 5 conferences. You know, you were going to potentially run into something like this. I mean, you got away with it for like 9 years, and then it ran into this year's kind of kerfuffle, is maybe a good word. Michael, thank you for the love on the super chat. I see Kwame Hayton down there. If he puts a super chat, we'll read some of his comments, but otherwise he can just talk to himself down there in the comments. There's a lot of takes on culture. And what's funny to me is the idea that culture played into this really much at all. I think when you look at when you actually look at the opt-outs and you actually look at the guys who didn't play and didn't play for different reasons, right? Some due to injury, some due to just opting out, some due to the NFL draft, some due to whatever. Maybe they wanted to protest, right? Like, some guys didn't give reasons for opting out. I think way more than people are giving credit for had to do with injury. And that's kind of what I've been talking with my buddies about. You know, you look at the guys who were banged up toward the end of the year, and you asked them to go out and play against Florida. You asked them to, like, Trey Benson was, I mean, this didn't really get reported a ton, but Trey Benson was questionable for the Louisville game. Like, he was banged up and hurt. And that's why Toefele ran so much, because Trey just wasn't 100%. And so you look at guys like, I mean, Trey Benson was banged up. Lawrence Toefele got surgery. Johnny Wilson had two concussions during the season. Keon Coleman was banged up through the year, also probably a first-round draft pick. Jaheim Bell was banged up through the year. Bless Harris transferred. Jared Verse, not worth risking a top 10, 15 draft pick. I agree. Fabian Lovett and, I mean, Braden Fisk and Tatum Bethune tried to go, couldn't go due to injury. Fabian Lovett couldn't go. I heard Josh Farmer had surgery, so he couldn't go. Yeah. Tatum Bethune, again, tried to go, couldn't. Renardo Green, Jerrion Jones, and Akeem Dent, Renardo and Akeem were banged up at times through the year. Obviously, Kevin Knowles had to come in and play for Akeem. So, like, most of these guys were banged up. Now, Renardo, I don't think was super banged up. I don't know if his was more of a draft thing. I'm sorry, Jarian, I don't think was super banged up. I don't know if his was more of a draft thing. But, like, nearly all the guys who opted out were injured. And that's something that's, like, not getting reported, because Florida State doesn't report injuries. But they were very banged up throughout the year. And so this idea that Florida State's got a culture problem, there may have been, like, two or three guys who opted out without being banged up. And I think when you factor in, like, how banged up are you, right? Like, if you're 80%, right, in this game, and it's a must-win game, you go out and play. But if you're, like, 75, 80% in a game that doesn't matter and your quarterback's not playing, and then your backup's not playing, I think it makes sense to opt out. So the idea that, and I'll get to that super chat in just a minute because it goes with our kind of our, you know, like the UGA stuff. So Kwame, I appreciate it. But the idea that the culture over the last 26 games was great, right? Like this climb and coming back and winning 19 in a row and finishing the last couple of years really strong, it was all undone because of one bowl game, to me, is just kind of ludicrous. So I don't know, Richie. I don't buy all the culture crap. Does it look good on UGA for them to have played? I don't know, man. They had just as many opt outs. They were just their backups. So, like, I don't know. I don't know what you mean to say. Like,
we knew. Well, we knew
did it. So quit talking to me about UGA's culture when they had just as many guys in the portal and opted out and everything else. It was just their guys that are second and third and fourth string.
We knew we're still at the front end of this rebuild. Like we are. Like I just mentioned, Mike just had his first really good recruiting class, still needs to get better in the trenches, but Georgia's had top three classes for the past 6-7 years. So of course their backups are going to be way better than our backups. And yeah, they had a bunch of opt-outs too, to your point. So it's not culture. You know, they have people transfer. Hey, Marvin Jones Jr., welcome to Tallahassee. Glad to have you. It's funny. But to your point, it's not a culture thing. This is just college football in 2023 because, you know, 10 years ago, nobody was opting out of these games. And, you know, it does suck because I would have loved to see, you know, if Jordan was healthy, a full strength Florida State versus a full strength Georgia, because I do think that would have been a good game. Georgia probably wins, but I think Florida State definitely has a chance.
Yeah, I mean, I think you play with some more guys, you probably and probably have a little bit better of a chance of keeping it somewhat respectable. Kwame says UGA had 26 opt-outs. However, Kirby has built his team recruiting, and Mike has mortgaged the roster for this special year. And it's unfortunate what happened, but the FSU fans have to question the recruiting and the roster going in 2024. Yeah, Kwame, I don't think you're breaking any news.
I think that's fair, honestly. I think that's fair, actually.
Florida State hasn't, I mean, and that's really what it comes down to. And that's maybe takes me into the next thing. Richie, I know you got to go in a second, but like this is my big takeaway, or the thing that I had the biggest issue with yesterday. Yeah, Florida State hasn't recruited well. I think that anybody would say that. Now, Mike did a really good job of getting guys to fill in and substitute for his lack of good recruiting. We haven't recruited better than a top 20 class until this year since Mike has been here. And obviously the guys that he recruited in a better than top 20 class can't play because they're not even enrolled yet. And so I think that, yeah, that's a big deal. And Mike's recruiting hasn't been good enough. He did a really good job in the portal getting guys to play over some of those three stars. Some of those three stars have been processed. And now we'll see kind of what his recruiting looks like if he can continue at a top 10 level. But for the most part of his tenure, the guys that were on the field yesterday were about 20th recruiting class level ranked. And you were going up against the number one recruiting team over the last 4 years. I don't think it's a super big surprise or shock to anybody that Florida State did not look competitive with the roughly the average number 20 recruiting class against the number one recruiting class in the country. I think that you can look at specific position groups and you can kind of question some of the recruiting that's gone on and you can see which position groups play the worst, and I'll call them out here in a minute. But yeah, I don't know. And we'll see. I think that, you know, the part of Kwame's post that I don't agree with necessarily is just that this is indicative of what is going to happen. This is going to have any impact on what's going to happen in 2024. Florida State's certainly not done in the portal. You've got guys that were still out there playing banged up. Hakeem Destin, who you'd think will play better, probably going to have a different quarterback, though I didn't think Brock was a major problem. And then Georgia's backups. People, what was funny to me, Richie, and, you know, is people were saying, you know, hey, okay, well, now Georgia's backups are in. Now things are going to get different. Like, Florida State wasn't playing with an entire roster of backups. Georgia's backups are better than most team starters, just for the record. Like, if you took away
Jermaine Johnson, heard of him?
Yeah. If you
he couldn't get on the field at Georgia.
If you took away Georgia's first string and made them play their schedule again and let them like have all 12 games, they go 10-2 at worst. Yeah. Right. And so, yeah, Florida State played its entire game with second and third stringers, and then Georgia puts its second stringers in, and then people are like, wow, nothing changed when Georgia put the second stringers in. I'm like, yeah, Georgia's backups are better than Florida State's backups. Like, I don't know why this is like that big of a shock to you. They still outweigh them. And then Florida State obviously started rotating some young guys in as well. But the people that seem surprised that Georgia's backups just kind of kept things rolling, that to me, that was a little bit funny. Or maybe they're just stupid, disingenuous. But the idea of like, oh man, the backups are in, I can't believe Florida State's not stopping them now, I was like, really? I didn't think anything was I thought it might slow down a little bit, but I didn't think any, I mean, at least we made the backups punt once or twice. So I don't know. Any takes on any of that?
Now, I'll give my final take before I get out of here. But yeah, I mean, it's depth, right? Georgia has recruited elite recruiting classes year after year after year. You know, I saw Kwame said, you know, Mike's been here 4 years, which is true, but what he had to sell when he got here with no connections with COVID and everything else, there was no way he's going to have a top recruiting class. You know, he finally had a 10-win season last year, which he needed. And he you know, basically cashed in on it with his recruiting class this year. And, you know, obviously the signing day didn't go as we wanted, but it's still a top 10 class, which is what you need. And if you put top 10 class after top 10 class after top 10 class with the coaching acumen that this staff has shown to have, I'm sure you'll touch on it when I head out here, TJ, but there's a couple assistants I'm looking at that I think need to go. Randy Shannon, have a nice day. I'm sorry. I don't like calling him out by name, but let's just say what it is. You know, I think, you know, what Kalen and Bethune did is as outstanding, but you're not recruiting the position anywhere where you need to right now. And again, Kalen was a Willie Taggart recruit, not a Randy Shannon, Mike Norvell recruit. That he can have a nice day. Papuchis, I think, is a really good coach, but I think he deserves a second look. And I'm probably setting you up for some uncomfortable solo time here, TJ, naming these names. But, you know, that Mike needs to look at his assistants and decide who needs to stay and who needs to leave, because this is, you know, what we saw yesterday. The only negative I'll take, because, again, I didn't care about the game for the most part, but the only negative I'll take is recruiting has not been where it needs to be from a total roster standpoint. We're going to go in the portal. We'll be fine in 2024. I think we'll be probably a 10-2 type team fighting for a playoff spot next year. I'll see you in Ireland for that Georgia Tech game. Cannot wait. I think the roster is going to be fine, but to get the program where we want it to be, we have to be like Georgia, where you're stacking top class after top class after top class, and that's how we get to where we need to be, to where we're stable and not relying on the portal every year.
Richie, I appreciate you for hanging out a minute. Harlan, I don't know if you can send me full screen and send some titles over or not, but Richie, happy new year. Thanks for hanging out for a few minutes. Be safe today. Don't get too hammered at the game. I know that's probably a done deal already. 1 o'clock kick probably helps you a little bit there, though. So
yeah, I'm just upset that Marshawn Lattimore is not playing, because I was really looking forward to him and Mike Evans getting to a full out fist fight today.
I saw Lindsay's tweet. So I'm hoping Carr sprains an ankle or something and Jameis will play. So, all right, man, good luck.
Yeah, she's wearing her Jameis jersey. I'll see you later.
See you, bud. So, yeah, I mean, Richie's on it. I mean, Richie's being real with it. And so we did have a super chat. I'll get to that real quick. And then we could Well, maybe do a call in later this week. Robert Rainey, a lot of variables happened in the last 4 weeks. Need some more recruiting cycles. Yeah, you do. You need to recruit at a better level. I mean, Florida State, you know, had Florida State played Syracuse yesterday? I mean, you play like a typical ACC bum team like Miami or Syracuse or something. You probably win the game pretty easily, you know, but you go play the number one team in the country, and that's very different. So, Robert, appreciate the love. Do I have any more in there, Harlan, that I haven't gotten to? All right, let's talk a little bit about, I mean, Richie kind of mentioned it, and, you know, like he said the name, so I don't have to feel as uncomfortable with it. But, yeah, I mean, recruiting's not good enough in some positions. I think there were positives yesterday. I think there were things that went well for the Seminoles yesterday. And there were some very obvious glaring holes. I think that what Florida State looked like in the front seven is a massive, massive indication that you are not recruiting well enough there depth-wise, and you are not even competitive in those positions. You know, I didn't think Pat Payton played extremely well. I think he got lost in space a couple of times. You think he took some plays off. You know, whatever. It's a bowl game that I said for a month I didn't care about, and so maybe he didn't care about it either. So, you know, it's hard to take away everything from just that one game. I thought Daryl Jackson had a little way to go, but again, you know, those guys are playing. All year, Pat Payton got the benefit of playing next to Farmer and Fisk and Verse. When you're out there by yourself and you have to be the guy, a little bit different, right? A little bit different role, a little bit different responsibility. Kalen played fine, I thought. I mean, I don't think he was going at a 1,000,000% effort, but I think Kalen played fine. But outside of that, man, I think your linebackers aren't good enough. You know, Omar Graham had a couple of nice tackles. I thought that the linebacking core was pretty bad, and I think that's a direct indication on the recruiting. So Richie's out here calling people out by names. I mean, you guys know Randy Shannon is the linebacker coach. I don't have to connect too many dots for you. The recruiting's not good enough there. And the depth at the linebacking core yesterday showed up, and it showed how terrible it is. You know, they did a good job with Tatum and Lundy and Kalen. Behind that, they've got nothing. They don't have a lot. You know, we'll see what Blake looks like next year. We'll see if Omar Graham's able to come along a little bit more. We'll see kind of what that looks like. But, man, I'm not confident that we can get the job done at the linebacking core. I'm not confident that recruiting is good enough. And, again, I've said this before. I won't go on like a 15-minute rant about, you know, who Mike needs to replace or who he needs to move on from or who needs to do this or who needs to do that. But if the recruiting is good enough for Mike, then it's good enough for me. Right. And that's somewhat like sarcasm. That's somewhat put it back on the head coach. It's not my job to make sure that Florida State's recruiting linebackers at an elite level. When we're winning championships here, we have guys like Telvin Smith and Christian Jones and others who are studs. And that's not the case right now. And if we don't improve that, then we're not going to win. So that's on Mike. I don't think you guys can disagree with me. I can lose some more subscribers for keeping it real. I don't think you're just going to develop three-star, three-named kids into Hall of Famers. You know, I don't think the development's good enough. I think you can develop them into Kalen DeLoaches if they play for 5 years. But I don't think the recruiting at the linebacking position is good enough, and I think Mike needs to take a serious look at that. Honestly, people have asked me, do I think he will? No, I don't think we move on. You know, he's not proven it to me yet. I'd love for Mike to prove me wrong there and this get old takes exposed. I would love that more than anything. But, yeah, the recruiting's just not good enough for the linebacker position. It showed up yesterday. Recruiting's not good enough along the defensive line either. You look at the two biggest issues yesterday. It was that Georgia could run for whatever they wanted. And I understand that they do that against a lot of teams, but they don't do it to the level that they did yesterday. Effort was terrible. Depth was terrible. Defensive line recruiting has to get better too. There's a narrative out there that, we'll just get guys in the portal. I've heard people say that certain coaches say, I don't even care about what happens at the defensive line recruiting because I'll just get people in the portal. And that's just such BS because they're in on these elite kids. They're in on the Blunts. They're in on the Baines. They're in on the Bassaints. They're in on the McCrays. They're in on the Wests. They're in on the Fox. They're in on all these guys, but they're just not doing it. They're not landing the elite guys. And that goes, I'm not saying that they should move on from Odell. I understand that the Odell situation is very different than other position groups. Odell will be here, I think, until he retires. There's rumors about that happening all the time, but I don't think defensive end recruiting has been good enough either. You know, and, you know, Richie mentioned JP, you know, so again, you don't have to connect a ton of dots to kind of get to where that is. But I don't think the front seven recruiting is good enough from really any of those three guys. You know, and I'm not saying you fire all three. I'm not saying you move on from all three, but something's got to change. You're not going to compete for championships without getting better there. And Florida State had a good defensive line this year. They had a good linebacking core this year. They really did. They were really good in those positions. When you get a Fisk, when you get a Verse out of the portal, I think that's really impressive. But you're not getting depth. You're not getting quality backups and depth at those positions. They may go out and get that Nick Scrouton kid from Purdue, and they may get another really, really, really good defensive end. But he's going to be here for 1 year, and he's not going to be here for any kind of depth. You're not getting guys to come up. And so, yeah, I think that it has to get better at those three positions. And again, if not, I mean, that's on Mike. Ultimately, I'm going to cheer for Florida State one way or the other. It really, I mean, I don't want to say it doesn't matter to me, but like I'm going to be on here making these dumb videos and cheering for the Noles and buying season tickets and supporting the Battles End one way or the other. They could lose their next 19 games and I'd still do it, right? But if we want to compete for championships, it's got to get better at those positions. I didn't even think the secondary was that bad. You want to know, I mean, how many times did AZ Thomas have great coverage and Beck just drop a ball in the breadbasket? I mean, it started getting frustrated how good he was. There was a narrative out there that Carson Beck wouldn't be that good or wasn't that guy. I got to plug my computer in. Hold on. Live radio. It was about to die. There was a narrative that Carson Beck wouldn't be that good or wasn't that guy. He was great when you give him 14 seconds to throw because the defensive line couldn't get any pressure. I thought the DBs were fine yesterday. You know, I think, could they have played better? Absolutely. You had a bunch of freshmen and young kids out there. I thought, I thought they were fine. I didn't think the DBs were really terrible by any means. I mean, Kevin Knowles has kind of limitations, and that's fine. But front seven on the defensive line, that's just a very discouraging spot. They have to start recruiting better there. You mentioned this, year four, it being year four, and you're starting to get some really good depth at other positions. Like, you were able to withstand, like, I thought the running game was, I mean, against Georgia, I thought the running game was fine. You know, it wasn't elite by any means, but I thought you ran fine yesterday at times. You know, we threw the ball a lot more. We opened it up a lot more. You kind of knew what you were up against. But, man, you were down Benson and Toa Philly, and I thought Douglas and Holmes stepped in and did fine. I didn't think that was a major issue. So good depth there. I thought the offensive line played really, really well. Did we give up one sack, two sacks? I thought the offensive line was fine. Georgia gets home with four a lot. Georgia is really talented up front. And I thought our offensive line kind of held them back for the most part. I mean, Brock held onto the ball a little too long at times. Pretty understandable, pretty normal for a young guy like that. One sack the whole game. I think that's pretty good. Only four tackles for losses. I thought the offensive line was actually pretty good. Now, that sack fumble was bad, but I mean, yeah, it happened like right after Robert Scott went out and you had some different guys in. So, I thought the offensive line played well. I thought Brock played pretty well. I mean, like, are you really upset for how Brock played? I think Brock was good. I think he looked a little more comfortable. He was off on a couple of deep shots. That's fine. He had a few drops. Williamson had a couple of drops. Destin Hill had one that he dropped. But I thought Brock played fairly well. One of the interceptions was really bad. One of them was just a tip off of Morlock's hands. That should have been caught as well. I thought Morlock got held in the end zone on that third and goal. But I thought Brock played okay. I thought the secondary played okay. Fitzgerald hit all his kicks. Mastromano punted really well. I thought Kentron played really, really well. I thought Ja'Kai Douglas played really well. He was probably like one of your players of the game, if you can even say that. But man, the front seven, just terrible. Just absolutely terrible. Your leading tacklers were Conrad Hussey, Shaheem Brown, and Azariah Thomas. Like, your front seven was awful. Justin Cryer actually played pretty well. Five tackles yesterday. I thought he was really good. For kind of a true freshman getting in there. Maybe he'll play linebacker for you. But yeah, it's just not good enough. At this point, he's a linebacker, but maybe he'll kind of play consistently in that linebacker role for you. But the front seven recruiting is not good enough. I think they need to get better. I need to I mean, you'd hope it gets better. I don't know what else to say on that. I don't know how much we can really harp on linebacker recruiting, defensive end recruiting, and defensive tackle recruiting. It's almost like the big, huge misses, like the Jeremiah Smith or the KJ Bolden, like take away from everyone's frustration about defensive line and linebacker recruiting, which to me is frustrating because that, you know, losing KJ Bolden sucks. I think he's a program changer. But I think our secondary room is so good and in such a good position so that it's hard for me to complain about the secondary. Jeremiah Smith, kind of the same thing. Jeremiah Smith is a program changer. It's frustrating. I really wanted that kid. I think we have a really talented wide receiver room and another talented wide receiver core kind of coming in. One of the best wide receiver hauls in the country with who we picked up. And it seems like we're in the Evan Stewart sweepstakes right now. Round two with Ole Miss. We won Keon Coleman. Let's see if we can go 2-0 against them. But it's just not good enough at certain positions. And you hope it gets better. If not, we will pray that the portal can do it. But I'll tell you, man, with that offensive line that Miami's building, with the way, I mean, we're trying to go to the Big Ten. And, you know, everybody knows that, right? Everybody knows we're trying to go to the Big Ten. And we have a defensive line that I feel like the guys are, that defensive line ain't going to work in the Big Ten, is what I'm going to say. Those 350-pound offensive linemen from Iowa and Wisconsin and Nebraska, that crap ain't going to work. That has to get better. Have to get better in the front seven. If we don't, then we're screwed. And what stinks is there's enough young talent. Like, there's enough young talent at wide receiver. There's enough young talent at offensive line. You've recruited those positions well. You've got young talent coming in at tight end, at quarterback, at wide receiver, all these positions, defensive back. You've got young talent everywhere. And will you take some lumps with that young talent? Absolutely. Will guys that are younger make mistakes next year? Absolutely. But you don't even have a lot of young talent coming in at the linebacker core and the defensive line room. You just don't. And so it's you got to hit in the portal again this year, but you probably got to hit in the portal again for 2025 too. And then maybe if you recruit well in the class of 25, then maybe by 2026, some of those guys, you can start to see the fruits of labor. So the defensive line room isn't going to just get better, you know, overnight or anything like that. It's going to take time. And where the wide receiver room, you may have some stars in there. Hakeem may develop into a star. Elijah Moore may develop into a star. Destin Hill may develop into a star. Maybe not. You could miss on some of those. But Cam Davis may develop into a star. Kazai Holmes may develop into a star. Defensive back, Charles Lester, Kai Bolden, Jamari Howard, some of the guys from last year, Conrad Hussey, others. I think you've really got a chance to see a lot of talent get developed in a lot of positions. That ain't the case. There's no depth. There's no talent like that's waiting in the wings at defensive tackle. Now, you pick up an Armando Blunt, there is. You pick up some linebackers, there are. There's all this smoke about Jaden Perlow. There's all this stuff kind of going on. We can't land anybody at the front seven. All right, that's my rant on that. I talked about some of the positions I think played fairly well. Brock, offensive line, Ja'Kai Douglas, Kentron, Fitzgerald kicked off well and made his only field goal. I thought Deuce Spann looked good in the Wildcat, maybe something that we'll see a little bit more next year. We didn't really utilize that until we had to, but that was something that I think was really, really effective for Florida State. Young DBs at times. We talked a little bit about the mind-numbing takes about culture. Again, I think a lot of that's overhyped. I think, you know, Georgia had more to play for. Georgia lost a game. Hey, can we get rid of the Roscoe guy? Is the Roscoe guy causing trouble, Harlan? I don't know if you saw that text. Oh, wait, hold on. Maybe he's not. Maybe Roscoe's talking about somebody else. Roscoe, I almost got rid of you, bro. I thought you were talking about us. Almost just got rid of one of my best friends here. What were we talking about? Yeah, the culture stuff to me is overblown. I think that you had 3 years of good culture and building, or 2.5 if you want to like count past the 0-4. If you want to count past the 0-4, you know, start. But I think that to think that all of that is gone because of one bowl game is silly. Like, everything that Mike's built is automatically gone because you lost one bowl game or because kids opted out of one bowl game. Again, we went through all of the players. We went through everyone that opted out for the most part, and kind of explained where the injuries were, who the injuries were, you know, what all was happening there. I think you maybe had four or five guys opt out that weren't injured, weren't banged up. I don't know if you think the other guys opting out, you think, you know, think Josh Farmer or Lawrence Toafili or whatever, guys that are coming back next year, getting surgery, or guys that had put off surgery due to the ACC championship and stuff. If you think them opting out is a culture issue, then I don't know, man, go find a new team, you know, to root for. If you're a troll in here, then I understand it. Like, take the shots where you can, because you can't beat Florida State. You know, a lot of hot takes on this is justification for why Florida State got left out of the playoff. You know, obviously, I think that's pretty hot takes, too. Might do a video on that specifically. All of the, you know, melted brain takes that people have saying, you know, that Florida, this is why they got left out. Like, you know, you weren't the same team without that one quarterback, but yet you are the same team with 40 guys opting out. The idea that Georgia's opt-outs were anything like Florida State's is ludicrous and hilarious. You know, I like my buddy Brooks Austin, but, you know, he was on here the other day, and I saw him tweeting about, hey, you know, Georgia had the same number of opt-outs and then still won by 60. A lot of Georgia's opt-outs were backups. A lot of Georgia's portal guys were backups. Georgia starters don't go into the portal. I think we all know that. They had five or six opt-outs, including Mims, including Bowers, that didn't play. Much different than the, 18 or so starter-level opt-outs that Florida State had, starter-level opt-outs slash injuries that Florida State had. When you look at who started for the Noles, the offensive line was mostly intact. So you've got five there. You know, who else started? Pat Payton, there's six. Kalen DeLoach, there's seven. I think those were your seven starters. I think you had 15 guys out. You had 15 guys not play in the game, whereas Florida State, whereas Georgia had most of their production there. Yeah, Harlan just sent me a tweet. Florida State was down 97% of its passing production, 90% of its rushing production, 73% of its receiving production, 46% of its tackle production. UGA was down 4% of their passing production, 3% of their rushing production, 33% of their receiving production, and 25% of their tackle production. So, yeah, Georgia certainly, you know, the idea that both teams had similar level opt-outs is hilarious to me. Again, Georgia's depth is really good. This was a bad matchup for Florida State. Like, I, you know, and I don't know why ESPN doesn't do this, probably because they're asshole idiots and don't make a lot of sense in anything they do. Sorry for the bad word before I go to church. But, Andre, you ain't got to tune in. You can be a bitch. You can go somewhere else. Dang, I just cussed again on church Sunday. We're talking about a game where Florida State lost by 60. Do you think, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to talk about on here? Get rid of Andre, please. we lost a game by 60. Well, what do you think this is, man? Do you think you were tuning in The Price is Right? Bro, I hope you're an FSU fan. I hope you get blocked. I hope you don't ever watch this show again, man. What the hell, man? Did you watch a game yesterday? Bro, y'all are funny. I lost my train of thought there. The idea that Florida State's and Georgia's opt-outs were anything similar is funny to me. Maybe that's the big takeaway. Georgia felt like they had something to play for. Florida State didn't. Again, if you go by the committee's logic, if you go by the logic of what the committee said, the four best teams, I don't know how Georgia's not one of your four best teams in the country. Like, do you not think that Florida State, I'm sorry, do you not think that Georgia would beat any of the four teams left? If the games don't matter, then why not just put them in? Even though they lost to Alabama, they'd probably win in a rematch. So, I don't know. I think Georgia kind of got screwed too. I don't think they got screwed to the level of Florida State by any means. But, yeah, I think Georgia should have been in it too. Oh, what I was saying is, of course ESPN doesn't do this. But to me, what would make the most sense is why didn't they, you know, the bowl tie-ins are dumb, but why didn't they just have Florida State play, Liberty and have Georgia and Oregon play? Like, wouldn't those games have been, like, those games would have been good. And I'm a Liberty grad though. So like, you know, and I'm saying bad words on church day, but, Liberty for Florida State would have been a good game to me. And then I also think that Georgia Oregon would have been a good game. Both those teams pissed. Both those teams lost their conference championship. Both those teams knew that they were winning in. I think that'd have been a good game. And I think Liberty Florida State would have been a good game. Liberty starters against Florida State's second or third string would have been a good game. Y'all might not like that result because Liberty can move that ball on offense. But I think Florida State could have run the ball pretty well against Liberty, and they'd have been fine. But those would have been two better games. Instead, you're going to get two blowouts. Conference tie-ins, conference affiliations. I get it. It's dumb. But there's no reason that you couldn't have just flipped some things around and had that game. I think that would have been fun. I think a game against Liberty, a true – because today was an – last night was an exhibition game. Last night was a scrimmage. See where you're at. See where your backups are. You did some things well. You weren't even close to competing, but you did some things okay. But why not play that against Liberty? Why not Oregon play Georgia and we have two good games? Now, Georgia might have still gone out there. You know what Georgia would have done? I mean, Georgia still would have gone out there and won by 20. You know, I mean, I like Dan Lanning. I like what Oregon did this year, but Georgia still would have won by 20, but they wouldn't have won by 60. We would have had a good game. All right. I don't know how much I have left. Listen, I know there's a lot of questions on Cam Ward. I know there's a lot of questions on DJU. I'm going to give my honest take on this. You know, I should probably make this its own video, but you know what? You guys have been around, and I appreciate you guys for tuning in. So if you're not already, hit the subscribe button. I turned on that thing where you... TJ, okay, I don't really respond to comments too much that are not super chats, but I will do this. TJ, that would have been an insult to us, putting us against Liberty and the committee wasn't expect. No, an insult would have been leaving an undefeated 13-0 team out of the playoffs. Playing against Liberty would not have been an insult. Leaving out an undefeated Power 5 conference champion in Florida State that beat two SEC teams, beat Clemson on the road, beat a top 15 Duke, beat a top 11 Louisville with your backup, that would have been an insult. Playing against Liberty in a bowl game that means nothing would not have been an insult. Oregon's playing against them. So I disagree with that wholeheartedly. I don't think you were trolling. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but no. The insult was leaving us out. The insult would not have been playing against Liberty. Cam Ward, DJ Uiagalelei. All right, I should make this its own little clickbaity interview or video itself, but I'm not. So because of that, y'all hit the subscribe button. We're almost... up to, what are we, I think we're getting close to 15K. So I'd really like to hit that 15K, by New Year's. I need 250 of you guys to go hit that right now. So we got a long way to go. But I think you got to give Cam Ward a deadline at the end of the day. Because here's a couple of my thoughts. One, if he picks Miami or the NFL and then you go DJU like the next day, DJU, in my opinion, DJU is going to commit like a day or two after Cam Ward does. And he's going to commit to the Seminoles if Ward doesn't pick the Noles. And so I think that how do you think it looks? You guys tell me in the comments, like slow down on all the other talk. I really want your take on this. If Cam Ward commits to Miami tomorrow, January 1st, right? And then DJU commits to Florida State the next day. Maybe Norvell doesn't care about this. Maybe the recruiters do not care about this. But I do, because I care about the optics at Florida State. Doesn't that look like we settled? Doesn't that look like, oh, Miami got their guy, and then we took who our second place guy was? I mean, that's what it looks like to me. Now, that's not saying DJU can't be better. That's not saying that we can't have a better season. That's not saying that we won't beat their ass again down in South Florida. But to me, that is what that looks like to me. Anybody think I'm wrong on that? I'd love to get your comments. That feels like settling to me. Now, again, maybe Norvell doesn't care. Maybe Norvell doesn't care what that looks like. But first of all, it matters to me. Second, if he goes to the NFL and then you settle, it still looks like you settled for a guy. It looks like you weren't confident. You weren't decisive. You weren't, hey, this is our guy and we're riding with him. It looks like, hey, we couldn't get that guy, so we settled for this one. Now, again, maybe Cam Ward goes in the seventh round and maybe DJU wins the Heisman next year and you get proof. It doesn't matter. But optically, it still looks bad to me. The worst case scenario, what's worse than all of that, though, is if you wait too long for Cam Ward and DJU starts to feel the pressure. Kids have to enroll. The semester starts on January 1st. Drop ads usually like 3 or 4 days later. And so if it gets to a point where DJU is like, man, I'm running out of time here. What's Cam Ward going to do? Decide on January 8th, January 9th, January 10th, and I'm not going to be able to even visit anywhere else. I'm not going to be able to have a backup option. What if DJU starts looking around then? What if DJU starts seeing what else is out there and opens things up? What if you miss out on both of them? To me, that's the biggest fear. Unless you think that Cam Ward's like a 10 out of 10, you're Mike Norvell and you got Cam Ward 10 out of 10, and you got DJU like 5 out of 10, and you're willing to take that risk. But if you think they're close, if you think Cam's a 9 and DJ's an 8, man, it's time to ride with DJ. I'd love to get proven wrong here. I'd love for Norvell to get his guy. I'd love for Cam Ward to commit while we're live on here. But to me, optically, it doesn't look great. Both optically and in a worst-case scenario situation, if you miss out on one or both of these guys. Miss out on Cam Ward, take the backup, doesn't look great, could work out fine. You miss out on both, I think you're in trouble. So we'll see. I think Florida State, I don't know. If I'm Mike Norvell, which I'm not, he's obviously much smarter than me, much more successful, and there's a reason he gets paid millions of dollars to coach football and recruit talent. And there's a reason I get paid pennies from YouTube to listen to Gator and Kane trolls and Florida State idiots that sometimes have no idea what they're talking about. That's not anybody in here. That's only the people we banned. But I think I'd tell Cam, like, hey, dog, we got to know something by, like, January 1st, 2nd. January 1st, 2nd, 3rd, somewhere in there, you got to let us know. We got to move on. The deadline just keeps getting pushed back. And you keep hearing different things from him and his family and his camp and the people that speak on his behalf. Oh, it'll be around the time of his visit. Oh, it'll be around Christmas. Oh, it'll be around the bowl game. Oh, it'll be around the first of the year. And it'll probably get pushed back again. So we'll see. Maybe stay on Cam Ward watch the next day or two. Yes, it is a hard fact, Rolex. Where does Florida State come into the AP poll ranked in 2024? I don't know, probably top 10. 10-ish? Is that fair? You look at the teams that are probably going to be ahead of them. Florida State loses a lot, obviously. But you look at the teams that will probably be ahead of them. Michigan will be ahead. Washington will be ahead. Texas will be ahead. So there's three. Alabama, Georgia will be ahead. Ohio State will be ahead. So there's six. Oregon probably ahead. So there's seven. Ole Miss, I think, is going to have a lot of hype. There's eight. Penn State, Missouri, I don't know if either of those will. Maybe Notre Dame will have a lot of hype. Maybe there's nine. So, yeah, I think Florida State would be anywhere from like that 8 to 12 range. I think 17's low. I think they'll be anywhere from like 8 to 12-ish. I think you give a lot of respect to the fact they won 13 in a row. They lost a lot of guys, but if they go out and get Cam Ward, if they can land some of these transfers, they'll be, I don't know, maybe right outside the top 10, maybe 12-ish would kind of be where I would guess. You go get Cam Ward, though, you might be up there. You get Cam Ward and you pick up, if you were able to get Evan Stewart and Cam Ward, I think people are going to really respect that. They're going to say, oh, look, Florida State did it again in the transfer portal. So I think that would bump them up a little bit. Maybe 12 is my guess right now. Top 15 is where I'm at. So, okay, Will, I'll agree with you, 17-ish, but plus two. That's a good question, though. Thanks for that. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think you need to be in a rush for a quarterback, but, I mean, you understand that you got to get somebody here soon, right? Like, enrollment's, like, in a week from tomorrow, or, like, semester starts, like, in a week. So I'm not like, oh man, I'm dying for a quarterback. I haven't tried to like do the meltdown thing the whole Discord has done for the last 2 weeks on not having a quarterback. But we heard signing day, then we heard Tuesday before signing day originally, then we heard Christmas, then we heard New Year. Just keeps getting pushed back and back. If you're wondering what the Discord is, most of you are probably already over there. It is a free app where people talk about Florida State football just basically all day. It never stops. They're usually up till 2 a.m. complaining about something. You can get access to it through patreon.com/DFNS. If you haven't signed up for our Patreon, we've had a lot of stuff going on. You need to go get access over there. It's $3 a month, patreon.com/DFNS. Also, if you shop anywhere for Florida State gear, you should be shopping at Garnet and Gold. GarnetandGold.com. Use code NOSLAW, NOSLAW, for all of your FSU gear. If you want to buy some Orange Bowl merch, that's a joke. That's your best place to do it. I do think they had like a 13-0 unconquered thing, though. So that's a cool shirt. Let's see here. When do we think Florida State leaves the ACC? What years? I don't know. I've kind of said... over and over and over and over again on this channel, I think that 2024 will be the last year that Florida State plays in the ACC. With this lawsuit going on, I could see the lawsuit extending out and being a little bit, making that timeline a little bit later, and I could see us playing in 2025 in the ACC as well. I don't want to say that I'm changing my prediction on that. I'm just saying I think that exists a little bit more because I could see the lawsuit dragging on further. Hope I'm wrong on that. Hopefully they settle before. Hopefully we get out sooner. My prediction still would be 2025. We're in a new conference by then. Maybe 2026 would be our first year. So I still think it's just one more year in the ACC. Could it be two? Possibly. So that's my take on that. Hey, I hope a lot of you guys are going to Ireland, obviously going to be a ton of fun. Listen, we have all year to whine and moan and complain and make excuses, as the one guy who got one comment off today said, about recruiting and coaches and this, that, and the other. At the end of the day, this team went 13-0. They played an exhibition game with 40 guys out, and they got their heads beat in. And that's frustrating. I would have rather not lost like that. My wife kept coming in and saying, like, babe, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry they're losing like this. And I was like, I mean, I wish it was closer, but I don't really care. So that, you know, that side of it is frustrating. Nobody likes to lose. I get it. But, I putting stock into anything with yesterday is silly to me. This team's going to come out and start the year 1-0 in Ireland. They're going to beat Georgia Tech. And then I think they come home after the Georgia Tech game and have a pretty easy one. They get a week off, right? They get a week. No. They play the next week. They have an extra bye, though. they play Labor Day against an ACC opponent, not announced yet. And then have Memphis the very next weekend. So, yeah, I mean, Florida State's probably going to start the season 3-0 again, right? And so we'll all be back on the train. It's all good. I know that yesterday sucked. Let's not be so down. I would not be okay with Florida State being independent. I just don't think that I think there are certain advantages that come along with it. Look how it's turned out for Notre Dame. They make a lot of money. They're never considered for anything because they just don't get that conference affiliation that is needed. Anyone else saw Georgia's fans was... Yeah, I don't know. Everybody makes fun of the team they're beating. So, all right. Hey, it's been a fun year. This is our last video of the year, if you think about it, because I'm not putting out like a short video today at any point. I'm not competing with the NFL. So I'm sure we'll have a video for January 1st. I'm sure we'll have something that comes out tomorrow. But honestly, this has been a really fun year. I want to take just a minute and thank you guys. When I look at, year over year, in 2022, we got about 600,000 views on the channel. In 2023, we got 3.7 million. So that's pretty crazy. 370 million divided by 0.625, that's like six times growth, right? And so that doesn't happen without you guys. That's not a brag at all. Like, I just put the videos out and you guys watch them. So that's on y'all for watching. But we grew a lot in 2023. The team going 13-0 certainly didn't hurt that, but the team before it won 10 games as well. And so, you know, the team continuing to climb and be good is certainly helpful. But $3.7 million is not terrible for the year. Let's start out next year and let's go to $5 million. Like, let's get even better. Let's keep growing it. I really do appreciate, I mean, I you know, for those that don't know, I do this full time. Like, I don't have another job. I just kind of try and make content, and then we chat in the Discord. If you want to support, you can go to, again, patreon.com/DFNS. You can sign up for $3 or $5 or $10 a month to just support. You also get access to inside info that we have and that we share, some things we can't always say on videos. So it's been a fun ride. When I started doing this full time a year and a half ago, I didn't know if we would be able to make it. And I feel like we're going to make it now, right? We've had enough growth to where I think we're in a good spot, and my kids aren't eating ramen every night, just every other night. And so if you want to support, you can always shoot a message. You can always hit up the Patreon and throw a couple of dollars a month over there. Again, there's a $3 a month option. Patreon.com/DFNS. I really do appreciate you guys, though, because this is a ton of fun. And win or loss, I think it's important that we get on here and chat with you guys after every game. And I didn't want to do this after a 60-point loss, but I feel better after it. So hopefully you feel better too. New calendar flips tomorrow. Hopefully we'll have some bangers here for January 1st. And we'll get some good recruiting news. We've got some big visits coming up. A lot of portal stuff going to happen this first week of January. I love you guys. Thank you for letting me do this full time. Go sign up to be the Patreon so my kids don't have to eat ramen tonight. Love you. Go Noles.